evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 118 of the Retrospectors podcast, Hitman Blood Money. My name is Patrick Arthur, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, James Turlings. James, it has been a long time since we've done a stealth game, far too long. We even played a JRPG in the middle, and we're returning to a series that we have already covered two games of. I believe this is the first for us. Normally, we jump around a lot, but here we are covering, I guess, the last major part of the original Hitman series, Hitman Blood Money. Is this a game that you were familiar with before we started playing it for this episode, or was it brand new?
Well, I of course knew about the game. I had a few friends back in school who really enjoyed it. I never played it myself, but, you know, out of all of the Hitman games, this is the one that I've heard the most about in terms of people enjoying it and thinking it's probably the best of the, you know, the original games on the PlayStation 2. I was really interested in this one. I had heard the story about the opera level from, you know, half a dozen different people. And I thought that, you know, maybe this would finally be the one to win me over, because the last two, not so much. I liked two a lot more than the first game, but it still wasn't quite there for me. So was kind of interested to see if Blood Money could be the game that turns me around on the series.
I actually think that's worth revisiting before we get into the discussion of this one, because on the whole, you and I have had diverging opinions. We both strongly disliked the first one, arguing that...
Not just disliked, right? Like, I think it's a bottom three game on the show in our 118 episodes. It's quite a bad game, in my opinion.
It's quite frustrating because there are a few actually enjoyable missions on the original game. So it's not like the game is fundamentally broken. It's just they didn't really have a focus of what they were trying to achieve with their tools. And it ends up being a pretty broken and frustrating puzzle game. So yeah, it was very disappointing for me. I know that some people hold it in very high regard, and I think that if you're the kind of person who enjoys maybe old school puzzle games, maybe there's still something to get out of it, but I found it frustrating. Whereas for me, Hitman 2 Silent Assassin was not just good, it was great. I really, really enjoyed Silent Assassin. Even some of the missions which are almost universally hated, I found it very immersive, and even the inability to run and having to walk everywhere through these big long levels, I found strangely enjoyable. There was something very atmospheric about me slowly walking through these massive levels, even those big snow levels, and I really enjoyed the pacing of that game. So verdict on Silent Assassin, James? I know that you didn't like it as much as me. I can't remember if you recommended it or not.
So I didn't end up recommending it. I think I can happily say that it's a decent game, and I could totally understand other people enjoying it a lot more than I did. For me, I think it came down to the inconsistency in the level quality. There was two or three levels that were generally great, and I actually enjoyed them quite a lot. But there were quite a lot of missions I found that were just blatantly unfun. They did a lot to rectify my issues with the first game, mainly being the fact that any failure kind of resulted in you needing to do the entire level from scratch. And in a slow plodding stealth game, that, you know, you can rack up a lot of hours doing the same, you know, repetitive tasks over and over and over again. I distinctly remember that level in the jungle with the big wire fence that I had to run around like two dozen times before I finally beat that level. It was very tedious and boring. But the second level had some great ones, like the first Japan level and the level in the hospital, which I thought was excellent too. So, you know, much better. But for me, if all of the levels had been, you know, on that kind of level, or even the one in the hotel and the spa, that was pretty good. If they had all been up there, I think I could easily recommend the game. But for me, they just weren't. That one where you're trudging around in the snow for ages, you just hate it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Hitman Blood Money is that I think this is where the series starts to solidify its identity that went on to influence the later games. You know, there's something a lot more structurally cohesive about what this game is trying to accomplish. Whether that thing is a good thing or not is something we'll get into in great detail on the show. So for those who have never listened to us before, James and I make up the Retrospectors podcast. What we do each and every episode is we play through a classic game of the past that's at least 15 years old with the intention of reviewing it from a modern perspective. What that means is that we're not here to understand these games and the context in which they are produced. It's something that I think is particularly relevant for the Hitman games, because I think that if you're critiquing Hitman games in the context in which they are produced, you would actually have a far higher opinion on them, because these games were so innovative and unique in terms of what they were trying to accomplish. But that's not what we're trying to do here. We're simply trying to assess it from a modern perspective, you know, decide how fun the game is to play today when you put it side by side by many of the other games that get released, you know, every other day now with thanks to the indie revolution.
Yeah, one thing that I think we've consistently found, or at least, you know, Pat and I have over the years listening to lots of reviews around the internet, is that there are a lot of people who will say a certain game is amazing, it was super revolutionary at the time, and then you go back and you play that game and it's just kind of like, okay. And while it's true that it was amazing when it came out, like, it's really hard to find concrete information that says, is it better to play this game or would I just be better off watching a YouTube video about it, right? Like, for Hitman 1, I think it's very clear that, you know, watching some reviews and seeing some other opinions is by far the best way to experience that game these days, I think.
Yeah, there are sacred cows in gaming history and in people's personal history. And even when you see re-releases of these games for modern systems, those reviews are still very often clouded and shrouded in nostalgia. People will often start reviews saying, this is one of my favorite games growing up as a kid. And then you play the game and you're utterly bewildered at what they could possibly be talking about, because the experience is so different from what they seem to have experienced all that time ago. This is all to say that that perspective isn't irrelevant. It's just not something we're doing on this show. And most marvelously, I think that what the episodes where we discover that the old games are just as good, if not better, than their modern counterparts are some of the most special ones. So it's a harsh standard of criticism, but it's one that can uncover absolute gold sometimes. So it's the approach we take with the show. So a little bit about Hitman Blood Money. We're going to do a bit of describing for this game, because I think it is important to paint a picture of what this game is like. Particularly in comparison to what the modern games do, and in comparison to what came before. So the game was developed by Eidos, and it first released in 2006 for PC, PS2, Xbox 360. It's been re-released many times since on the next generation of consoles, it's been released on phones, and most recently it got a release on the Switch with some quality of life features. So basically, however you want to play this game, there is a way to enjoy it, unlike the original two games, which were PC exclusives. So for those who have never played a Hitman game before, the way it works is that you can consider these social stealth puzzle games, I guess. They have less of traditional stealth game mechanics like Thief or Splinter Cell. You're doing less skulking in shadows and hiding in vents to avoid enemy patrols. They're far more focused on you having to assassinate a target and figuring out how to first get to the target and then figure out how to kill the target and get away without being spotted. They are also ostensibly third-person shooters, and the game gives you a lot of tools to play this game as a third-person shooter with lots of guns and upgrades. But I think that playing the games like that is kind of insane. Like, to start with, they're bad third-person shooters, and also they're not playing to the game's strengths in any meaningful way. I do think this is worth bringing up, because if you look at what the game presents you, if you play the tutorial level and you look at what the upgrades look like, you might think this was a hybrid shooter stealth game. And while that is technically an option, I don't think it's advisable for 99.9% of people to play it that way. What about you, James? I was basically resetting my saves if ever I got discovered. Did you play it in the same way?
Yep, I played it exactly the same way, and this is something that I think is a foible in basically every stealth game. They include all of these options for you to, you know, maybe you've played a few levels in a row and you want to de-stress by just shooting the place up or something. I don't know. I never really indulge in that kind of thing. I find the enjoyable parts of the levels is sneaking around and in, doing the puzzly sorts of things. So, just other games are like this, right?
Yes, but not to the same degree, right? Like, I think that Metal Gear Solid 2 had, for example, which we played fairly recently, if you could trank people, you could hide and then reset the alarm. Definitely in the little later Metal Gear Solid games, you can get discovered and get into a firefight. Dishonored has this. Even Thief has the concept of running away. If you get discovered, you can absolutely run away. And when I've been playing the mod, the Black Parade, I've been trying to utilize running away more as opposed to just reloading saves. Hitman, I feel like getting discovered is like a game over. I never was able to get discovered. Immediately, I'd have like 40 people shooting at me every single time. So I'd say it's that taken to the extreme.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. And also, it just kind of, like, I don't know, it feels like I failed if I get caught in this game. So I don't, like, I want to try again and do it properly. And it's definitely more pronounced here, for sure.
Yeah, I think in terms of our discussion, James, do you want to touch on the story first and then we'll get more into the gameplay?
Honestly, this was the part of the game that I wrote the least amount of notes for. I found it to be pretty dull, to be honest. They kind of present the story in a seemingly interesting way from the they have like an unreliable narrator, right? This guy who is claiming to be director of the CIA,
Yes.
and he's kind of talking to this reporter who he's brought in to cover this, huge scoop that he has about this terrible assassin, Agent 47 that they've been trying to catch. And basically, before every level, he gives you this little, description of we almost got him this time, but next time will be
It's
different. I don't know.
actually, it gets quite funny after a while when he says every single time he's like, we caught him, and then he's like, oh, but he got away every single time.
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous. I didn't really care for these characters at all. I found the story, or at least world building kind of stuff that was happening in the mission, to be more enjoyable. There was a bit of like internal consistency to the levels where like lots of characters related to each other in certain ways. And that was more fun, I thought. Whereas, this overarching narrative, whatever, I couldn't care less,
See,
honestly.
I think the problem lies primarily with the plot. I think the framing device here is actually very cool because what happens is the director of the CIA relates what happened to the journalist, and it's always portraying Codename 47 as like a bogeyman, as an evil person. And then you actually do the mission and you find out the reality is far, far different. The people you're assassinating are giant pieces of shit. And you're usually well justified in going about it. I think the problem is that, much as I hate to say it, I think 47 just isn't an interesting character, at least in the way he's portrayed
Yeah,
in
I
this
think
game.
there was room to make him have more dimensions, but he's only ever interested in getting paid. Every interaction with another character is like, where's the money? That's it. There isn't even this. I could understand that if there was this like narrative thread where he needed the money for a specific thing that the player could relate to, maybe, but he just has no family and no connections, and there's Diana, but this isn't a character that you're like rooting for, right? Like he's kind of there. I don't know.
My problem with it is that I don't think they push this concept far enough. So we get a couple of scenes where 47 is shown to be, a pretty bad guy. Like there's one where he gets a delivery from a guy, he hands him a letter, and then he shoots the guy who delivers the
Yep.
message. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting because we don't often get characters in video games, particularly one you're playing, who are just evil. But the problem is, you are just assassinating super duper evil people in every single mission. I think that if you wanted to make this character a pure, cold-blooded professional, he needed to be murdering some good people as well. But as far as I can tell, in every single mission, the people you're going after are bad guys. So I think that if they really wanted to make him this cold professional who's killing for money, he needed to be willing to kill anyone for money. And that means even people that we would be shocked that he was killing.
Yeah, I would be okay with either direction. I think for me, the biggest thing is he has no goal. And I, as a player, have no goal. And there's no stakes. Like, you're not going to get caught in these missions. And every single mission, the CIA guy says, we caught him, but he didn't. So, like, none of that, like, the build-up to the level has any impact. And, you know, you're not, like, hanging by a thread to find out if 47 achieves what he's setting out to do. It's just one mission after the other. And yeah, I don't know. It just, there's nothing there, really.
Yeah, for me, it was a cool concept, but one that I think was not fully executed well. There wasn't enough background detail. The other nice detail I want to mention is the newspapers that you get at the end of every mission that do contain plot, as well as the rank you achieve. But in general, I do agree. I don't think the story is a strong part of this game, despite having a potentially interesting tone and atmosphere. There's also the fact that, and we'll get into this a lot in a moment, the structure of this game is such that having a continuous narrative is just less relevant to the way it wants to tell its story, because each mission is a specific,
very self-contained,
exactly,
right?
A self-contained specific location, unlike the more multi-part and linear progressive missions in Silent Assassin. You just tend to pay less attention to the overall story and focus more on the narrative that's expressed through the mission itself.
I reckon the series could do this thing where there's like a mystery and you've got multiple potential hits that you can pick from, and you're kind of trying to figure stuff out and try to like work your way through the game in a more optimal path, you know.
Right, that makes sense.
They could do stuff like that. I think that'd make me more engaged with the narrative.
Yeah, and it also makes sense, right? Like, you would be entertaining multiple contracts at once.
Yeah, and you get to pick one and you weigh up, you know, this one might be harder, but it pays out more, but this one pays less, but maybe it gives me some narrative thread to follow. I think that could be quite fun, actually.
I agree. That does sound quite cool. And it definitely makes sense in terms of the context of the game. And there are enough missions where they could usually do that. Yeah, cool idea, Jim.
One thing that impressed me about this game, actually, was that I think they managed to have a lot of really cool visual direction and a lot of the levels that was well backed up by the narrative and what was going on. Mm-hmm. For example, the Mardi Gras takes place in this massive sprawling, you know, set of streets, and there's like hundreds of people walking around in crazy costumes, and there's all of this opportunity for like this dramatic flair and goofiness to happen now, but without it feeling out of place. Another example is there was a level at this rich guy's mansion who, it kind of struck me as like you were assassinating Hugh Hefner basically at his mansion, right? Like, he likes, you know, taking exotic videos of people, you know, in the act. And there's this bit where you break into his studios and he's got this movie stage kind of set up with this huge coffin that's glowing, and like there's all sorts of silly, you know, fun stuff in the levels without it feeling out of place. Like, everything's contextually appropriate. But this kind of thing wasn't present in the last couple of games, and I find it adds like this layer of, you know, humor and fun to the levels that wasn't here previously.
Yeah, the tone is definitely different. There was a grounded seriousness to the previous two games. I'd say overall what it is the game is leaning far more heavily into its gameplay mechanics and letting its gameplay mechanics and ideals drive the story and tone. Because I've read people say that Hitman Blood Money is a dark game, and I don't really agree, because I think that while narratively...
I mean, it's about assassination, so...
Well, yeah, narratively, maybe it's trying to establish that atmosphere, but it
but
doesn't...
But despite that, it's not, like, tonally grim or anything, right? Like, there's a lot of lighthearted stuff happening. It's just, you know, you've got this main character who's deadpan the whole time while silliness is happening around him.
Yeah, and there's so much silliness to so much of what's happening. This, I mean, so many of the kills are scripted, right? It's almost like a stage play in some ways with how it all goes down. So I found that the tone of this game was, like you said, kind of humorous in how it was executed. I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I think that that's a good thing. It makes the game more fun to play. But I don't really vibe with this idea that the game is dark and gritty compared to the games that came before. I thought the previous games were definitely more grounded and gritty as a result.
Yeah, I think that there has been something lost in this game. So in terms of the gameplay changes, we'll get into this a bit. I think this structure is a lot different to the last two in that the levels have become A, much more open, and B, the, you know, what we would consider traditional stealth elements, like you're sneaking and you're watching for patrols and, you know, sneaking through the gaps and hiding in the shadows, that kind of thing, has been massively de-emphasized here. I think that in the last two games, we kind of identified that Hitman is going for this, you know, this different direction, this hiding in plain sight kind of gameplay where you are stealing costumes or clothes and putting them on and then trying to blend in the middle of people rather than, you know, constantly hiding. But the last two games definitely still did have a lot of traditional stealth gameplay, specifically like in the Japanese mansion levels, there was a lot of actual sneaking around. In this game, you can, but once you have a costume, you can basically sprint at full speed everywhere. Whereas in Hitman 2, one of the experiences I had quite often and really enjoyed was when you are in costume walking through a hall of guards as like slowly and trying to act as natural as possible because this suspicion bar is jumping up and down and, you know, you're trying not to raise suspicion and it's really tense.
Yeah.
And that is gone in this game, basically.
Absolutely. It's actually to me a, like, it has downsides and upsides, right? The real upside in Hitman 2 Silent Assassin is that you regularly felt, as you said, under pressure. You couldn't freely explore. Like, you had to find opportunities to get around. And I remember failing on some of those missions multiple times just because, and I would be edging forward and seeing where I could go, and I couldn't fully get a paint a picture in my head of where everything was. With this money, once you find the uniform, the world is your oyster. You're sprinting around full pelt to explore the puzzle opportunities available to you. There's also a lot more trial and error in terms of going through those puzzle opportunities. So it's a lot of trying a thing, then reloading, then sprinting around and trying the next thing. With the original game, it was less trial and error and more me thinking, oh God, please let this work. And then I'd breathe a sigh of relief when it did work.
I actually think that trial and error is a hallmark of the series in general. And it's one of the reasons that I hated the first game and was less high on the second because, well, the second fixed it up a lot. Because the problem with the first game was there was heaps of trial and error, and your punishment for failing the trial and error was doing the whole level again from the start. The second game fixes this a little bit by introducing mid-level saves, albeit limited ones, and that's, you know, here still. But I think that they've realized that because the series and what they're going for with these, you know, these assassination attempts kind of requires more trial and error than traditional stealth. Like, I think if I'm playing a game like Thief or something, I think if I'm very familiar with how to play stealth games, then I can be very patient and I can get through a bunch of, you know, bits pretty comfortably, you know, without having to guess about, you know, I know that somewhere there's a gap to slip through the patrol. I just have to wait and find it. In this game, there's quite a lot of times where you don't know until you try. So you just try something and then you fail, right? So to me, them removing a lot of the traditional stealth actually had a big improvement on my impression on the game, because while I do enjoy that generally, what I don't like is I make a save just before a bit of stealth, you know, I don't know it's there, and then I have to do that really slow meandering bit of stealth three times in a row, and it's really fun the first time, But the second and the third time, it's extremely tedious. So by taking that out, I felt that, you know, whenever I had to reload a save, I was still meaningfully doing the trial and error that I wanted to be doing, rather than loading, spending 5 minutes doing stealth, then doing the bit I was trying to, you know, check.
Yeah, I think that's actually a fair critique, particularly since some of the Hitman Silent Assassin levels are so massive. Definitely there are parts where if you fail, you have to do a lot of slow walking through snow. Like, I absolutely agree with that. It's more that, I guess, Hitman 2 Silent Assassin had variety. It did have some levels that were kind of prototypically similar to how every level is in Hitman Blood Money, but it also had these much longer linear-esque levels, which still might have given you one or two options along the way, but were far more about progressing through them to reach an endpoint as opposed to interacting with a smorgasbord of options. And I think that those linear missions weren't actually bad. And in many cases, I think that they were just as good as the more toolboxy missions, at least in the original game. I would have liked to have seen some more of those missions expanded upon in interesting ways, as opposed to 13 levels which follow the exact same structure. But I do understand why they chose to go this route, and they have dramatically expanded upon this kind of structure in this game.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. There is like kind of a monotony here in terms of, like, you know, every level structure is quite similar to one another. I do think they at least have a good level structure here, so that's not too much of a problem. To me personally, those longer linear levels in the second game ended up being the reason I didn't recommend it, actually. So for me, it's all upside, but I can totally see, like, and especially the fact, like, I think it's probably a mistake that the game is so lenient on sprinting. I think there's a lot of tension and atmosphere that's just out the window with that change, which to me is a big negative.
It also just, when you have the right uniform, you're just complete, like, you're completely unimpeded. There's nothing that stops you. The modern games have these things called enforcers. So there are specific NPCs that see through specific costumes. And what that means is that even when you are wearing the correct costume, you do not have free reign of a space. There will still be one or two NPCs that can see through your disguise if given time. And that, to me, is the best balance of what what Silent Assassin in this game does, because it creates these interesting dynamic scenarios where you're mostly free to move, but you do still have to be aware of your scenario and try to figure out how to isolate or avoid these specific NPCs.
That sounds good, because I think when people don't have a formula, you know, down pat, they do this thing where they, you know, bounce from one extreme to the other and then slowly hone in on what's actually good. So which sounds like they've done that. So this is the other extreme compared to the first game, for example. I think it's a better extreme, but still not quite the pinnacle of, you know, the series' potential. In terms of the actual, like, the way the levels are different, did we want to talk about that? Like, specifically how those levels are structured and what this, you know, consistent level design is?
Yeah, I think the best way to do this is kind of to just talk everyone through a mission. So we're going to spoil one mission here. I think it's worth spoiling one mission. We'll pick one of the, not one of the most famous ones to go through. So the first thing that happens when you start a mission is you get a screen where you get a briefing of who you need to kill, and then you select some equipment. I alluded to this before, but this is one of the big misses of the game for me. The way it gives you all of these different guns and then all of these different ways to upgrade them progressively.
There's two good ones. Like, there's like one good gun upgrade, which is the silencer on any of the guns. And then in terms of equipment, there's one that's like you pick locks faster and one that gives you a second remote mine. And those are the only ones that matter as far as I'm concerned.
So there was one other cool one. You could put your sniper rifle in a undetectable case, and in the final mission you can get it through a metal detector, which I was very proud to figure out.
Oh, that's pretty good,
Yeah,
actually. Yeah,
but
I didn't do that.
for the most part, a lot of these are like upgrading, you know, damage and all this other stuff that is relevant to the game being a shooter, but is totally irrelevant to the way I think most sane people will play this game. And so all of the money I got, James, went into purchasing intel. I just bought all the intel every mission because that's really all I was spending it on.
I was really actually excited when I saw there was this upgrade screen. I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to unlock like gadgets and all of this stuff that's going to make, going back and read. Like, I might unlock this thing when I'm 80% through the game that lets me play the first mission in a different way or something like that. That's what I was expecting, but no, it's just kind of like I didn't use 90% of it
Yeah,
because,
it was less compelling than No One Lives Forever's Choose gadgets, and they weren't, you know, incredible in and of themselves. So, I mean, Metal Gear Solid 5 kind of suffers from this problem as well, where so much of the upgrade tree is lethal options when you're trying to play the game non-lethally. But once again, it's an even bigger issue here because you just don't want to ever get into a scenario where you're mowing down hordes of people with an automatic shotgun. So, but that being said, so you go into the mission. I was usually going with minimal equipment, James. I pretty much only took the silenced pistol and the sniper rifle occasionally. Having a silenced pistol is always useful when you can snap people's heads off with one shot, but everything else I'd leave behind. And you get into a mission. You have the briefing that tells you the target, the mission loads in, and the world is now your oyster. So you always start in a safe area. So if you're at the party mansion, you start outside the party mansion. If you're sometimes huge areas of the mission are safe area. There's one where you're on a boat, and the vast majority of the boat is considered a safe area. But there will be lots of areas that are unsafe that you cannot get through in your regular suit and tie without being stopped and frisked or whatever it is. So generally what you want to do is you want to spend the first part of the mission hunting down for a costume, looking through the level, either finding one spare or isolating some poor soul and taking it.
And most of the levels start this way. And I actually found that this very first part of each mission to be one of the most enjoyable, particularly in the White House assassination level. I thought that the puzzle to get, a convincing disguise to be quite involved in that one. The very first real level, other than the tutorial, it's pretty straightforward. There's like a guard who'll walk into, some very secluded area, and you can just knock him out and grab it. Sometimes it's a little trickier, but most of the levels, the very first costume you get is quite easy to obtain, I'd say.
Yeah, and in the end, this generally isn't super hard. But I agree with you, James. It's really enjoyable. And every time a new level started, I was always intrigued and interested what would happen again, what it would be like. Every single location does feel unique from the next. You don't have like here's three office buildings in a row. No, you have a wide variety of unique locations. And it's very fun seeing what you can explore and what you can't. And then you start to craft a plan for how am I going to get full access to this.
Yeah, and the levels this time around are actually, I'd say, smaller in general, but
Definitely
they
smaller.
way smaller, but more dense with things to find, I think,
Yeah,
which is
absolutely.
really important. So getting around, it's actually really quick to get from one point to another. But you can spend like quite a bit of time in each level exploring, because it's not just I walk around the level and I find, okay, I map it out in my mind, this is here and here. You also kind of have to map out temporally what's happening when, right? Because the NPCs have these schedules that they follow and they walk around, and certain actions and certain things are only accomplishable when an NPC is in a certain spot. So trying to figure out what makes each NPC tick, where they go, where they generally live, which NPCs are kind of connected to each other, that's all part of the big puzzle that's going on in each level.
So, James, how did you feel about this aspect of the game? Because as I was playing through the game, I was like, you know what? This game is not that different from a time loop game. Like, I definitely felt in parts it's like I'm playing Outer Wilds or Deathloop, where the point is not to get it right and kill them on the first try. The point on the earlier loops or your earlier saves
is to scout.
Is to scout and gather information and plan before you can actually fulfill the perfect assassination. So how did you feel about this conceptually? Do you think this is a good way to do this kind of puzzle gameplay? Or do you think it just led to a lot of waiting around? Or are both true?
I think both true. I always thought that even in the first review we did of the first game, I thought that the classic level formula was scout, plan, execute. You know, run around, find out what's going on, formulate a plan, and then try to execute that plan. There's a lot more scouting in this game, I think.
Actually, that's a good way to put it, actually. You do a lot more scouting and iterations on scout.
Yeah, and I think that it's more enjoyable here than it was previously for quite a few reasons. So the first is that the levels are so densely packed with stuff to find. Like, this game introduces, or at least expands upon, the concept of accidental kills, where, you know, you can basically kill someone without it seeming like it was a murder. For example, if someone happens to fall out of a building or a piano happens to fall on their head, what a shame. And that is a lot more present here. So you're quite rewarded for walking around the levels and finding stuff. There are just many possible ways to kill your target without, you know, using a gun or strangling them. There's always something funny to do, like you can poison food. You know, one of the most famous levels is that opera where you replace a fake gun with a real gun and the axes shoot each other. You know, there's all sorts of that. And that thing I mentioned earlier where the levels have all of this dramatic visual flair to them makes, you know, these levels aren't bland, right? Even the first non-tutorial level is this big wine cellar, right? And down in the wine cellar, there's this giant hidden door that one of the NPCs shows you. And if you follow them, there's like a drug lab, you know, hidden under the level. There's all sorts of stuff to find. It's really cool.
So talk me through what happened for you on that opera level, how you eventually reached the conclusion of how to carry out that that accidental kill. Because for me, this whole process ended up being a little frustrating. So what happens is you have a guy practicing an opera, and then at the end of it, he shoots a guy with a gun. The actor returns to his room. He eventually decides to put the gun down briefly to go to the bathroom, comes back from the bathroom, picks up the gun, then goes back on stage and repeats the rehearsal. There are a lot of moving parts here, right? I spent a lot of time searching for a prop room. And then I discovered the actor and I was like, how am I meant to actually do this? Then I realized that you could hide in the closet. And so I hid in the closet for 3 minutes. And then I missed my opportunity to do the switch because I didn't even realize that he put the gun down on the bench or if that's what I was meant to do. Do you think that there's...
Had a very similar experience to you where I found this level to be one of the weaker ones. And I think part of the problem is that I've been talking to people about this game, and most people who've heard of Blood Money know about this kill. But every single person who doesn't know about it, when I've told them, they have burst into laughter and said, "That's amazing." And I remember when I was like 14 and someone showed me this on their PS2, I thought it was awesome too. The problem for me is that I'm now like 30 and I know about this, so, you know, that novelty is gone. So with that gone, a lot of the value of the level is lost because, you know, I didn't find this by accident. So because I knew about this ahead of time and I was specifically trying to get that kill, I found it a lot more frustrating than I think I would have if I had gone into it blind.
So, but this is a really good example of that iterative trial and error, you trying to figure shit out. And I think it's a thing that is a common thread throughout a lot of the kills. I think that it's exacerbated in this mission by the fact that you have to wait for 3 minutes in the closet sometimes.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember I created a save. I used one of my pressure saves just because I was like, I don't want to have to wait 3 minutes every time if I screw this up. Also in that mission is another instance of trial and error where and this is a different kind. So I discovered quite early on that there was a big light fixture that you could destroy with a bomb. And I was like, why can I do this? What does this actually accomplish? It doesn't accomplish anything because it's not between, it's not anywhere near any of the two people you need to kill. But it turns out that when you shoot, or sorry, when the first guy gets shot, your other target runs downstairs and trips over the carpet right under where that light fixture is.
Yes.
Now, is this a problem? Because you don't have any way to understand how that could be utilized without first killing one of the targets, in which case you wouldn't have the bomb set up on the light because you have no reason to think that that target would run down from his upstairs booth and pause perfectly under the light. Or is this just an intrinsic part of the Hitman Blood Money formula where you're expected to do shit, see what happens, and then iterate further?
I think it's part of the formula. I had this experience where I just put the bomb on that light because I figured, because you can only put bombs right in certain places, that
there's a reason for it, right?
Yeah, and that's basically a bit of logic that you can follow. And I kind of think that it's weird. It's kind of like metagamey in a way, like, but it does give you this peace of mind knowing that if you put the bomb there, it'll probably be useful at some point. And it kind of reduces this problem you're talking about. I kind of think it would be nicer if you could put the bomb anywhere and you had to, like, maybe on a second playthrough do stuff like that. I think it's just part of the game. I watched a few videos of people who are good at the game, and it's crazy. They finish the levels in, like, 30 seconds or something.
Mm-hmm.
This guy throws this coin over the house, and it hits this glass ceiling, which shatters and kills the woman inside. It's like, what?
That's amazing. I didn't even know that was possible.
The game rewards you for knowledge more than it rewards you for, like, mechanical skill, I think.
Yes, although there is some mechanical jankiness here that when you get to grips with the game does become easier. The number of times I screwed up trying to garrote a person earlier in the game is embarrassing, and every single time it was a reload.
Yeah, it's,
but I don't actually think this is a major issue though, because I don't, as you said, the game isn't about mechanical fidelity. Fucking it up a couple of times is no big deal. Like, that's just not really what the game is about.
Yeah, I think it's a good formula. Like, generally, because they've made the levels fun to explore, it just results in me running around the levels having fun for figuring things out. And to me, that's, like, a pretty good thing.
Yeah, I guess I'm a bit more ambivalent overall, because I found a lot of the times the process of figuring out some of these missions to be frustrating. Banging my head against a wall, I guess, running around, not really knowing what to do. It was stuff like I found on a mission which I thought was pretty good on balance, where I couldn't figure out how to progress, and then I found a specific costume for the psychiatrist which let me progress.
Yeah, that level was hard when you didn't know what to do. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and then after that, the level opened up a lot, but it was still a lot of, like, endless wandering until I stumbled upon a specific solution.
I thought it was poorly explained I skimmed something. I didn't quite understand what I was supposed to be doing in that level. There was another one, the one in the hotel in Vegas. I thought it was very unclear, and part of it's because you have to wait so long for some of the targets to get to the level, like by a car. It's kind of frustrating and tedious. The level on the boat, I hated. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. When you didn't know what to do, it could be frustrating. I had this problem on the Mardi Gras, the psychiatry place, the hotel, and the boat.
I do think it's also worth distinguishing a first-time playthrough of this game to...
It's so different.
The replayable, deep, long-term nature of this game. We have spoken about this before somewhat, but the nature of our podcast is that we are not playing any of these games for 100 hours. And some people a lot of people, myself included, when you really enjoy a game, a lot of the enjoyment of it comes from replaying it over and over again. And in some sense, that means our review of it is limited because I'm not playing these missions 10 times over. And certainly the modern Hitman games, with each game only having like 6 missions, if you only play through that game a single time, you're not really playing the game. Hitman Blood Money has a bit more content, so definitely I think you get a full experience from a full playthrough. But for the people who love this game and play it over and over, I do think that is a meaningfully different kind of experience. Once you know the basic building blocks of how to progress through the level, you can kind of get to the more fun, creative stuff faster. So less of a percentage of your experience is spent running around in circles cluelessly, and more is spent doing the fun, cool shit.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I know the later games introduced this concept of rewarding you for doing kills in specific ways. They will encourage you to play the level again and do it this way or this way or this way.
With different incentives, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's cool and something that I felt was kind of missing here because of how easy it is to get around the levels. I wouldn't personally get too much enjoyment out of replaying them and killing the guys this way, or this way. But if they had specific challenges like built into the level so that when you replayed it, it felt a bit different and was a significantly different challenge, then, you know, I think that would be a really good addition. So I'm actually kind of interested about that aspect of the newer ones.
I would say if you had to sum up the single biggest innovation that the modern Hitman games have, is that they figured out how to integrate a robust, immersive, semi-stealth system with the classic Hitman formula. So a way a lot of the people play the high-level challenge runs for Hitman is suit only. So you are not allowed to use costumes. And it works in that game because the stealth systems at play are a lot more robust. So they have to figure out creative ways to reach the targets and deal with them without ever, you know, just changing into a costume and just getting free entry to the entire building. Something like that I don't think would work in Blood Money. You probably technically can do a suit-only run through with good AI abuse or anything, but it's not fun in the same way because the levels aren't designed around in a meaningful way. And the stealth systems, you're crawling, you're, you know, shimmying and going over balconies, the level design being more open to allow you to travel it more freely, just doesn't exist. So at its heart, this game is still a puzzle game to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And to me, that's fine. I'm pretty happy with solving this puzzle once and then being done with the game. I probably wouldn't, you know, replay too many of the levels later on, but I had a good time with it.
Shall we cut to a music break, James?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I thought that the soundtrack was one of the things I really liked about Silent Assassin. So for the most part, I think it was good here, although there are fewer tracks that I really liked. I think there was a couple on the second games that really stood out to me, whereas here, they're all just like quite good. And I didn't really think of any of them as being significantly better than the others or having a very lasting impression on me. I liked the, you know, the intro music when you're loading the game up. I thought that was quite nice. But it's just, you know, pretty good stuff all around here.
I think this one is an improvement over Silent Assassin soundtrack. I went back and listened to them both, and it just seems like this one has expanded on and, I guess, created more compelling and deeper complex sounds while maintaining a lot of the same vibes. I do think that there are a couple of standouts. Hunter, the one that's about to play, is absolutely my favorite. And I think that it is this beautiful kind of pensive, brooding music that leans heavily into, you know, gothic sounds. So with the choirs coming over the top. I think it really is an important part of this game's identity. The Hitman games have a very unique soundtrack, and it needed to be a soundtrack that kind of wrapped in and around you walking around the place, not doing much, while also still trying to create a kind of tension. And I think that these songs certainly achieve that flawlessly. Is it the kind of soundtrack that you listen to outside of the game? Probably not. I don't think so. I don't think that there are enough good tracks, and I just don't think it's the kind of thing you listen to casually. But it is a very, very good fit for this game. It's a perfect fit in some ways, because if I were to hear, you know, 10 seconds of a song from a Hitman game, I would immediately know it was from.
Mm. Yeah, I do think it does a good job of setting the atmosphere. There is, I almost wish there was more songs on the soundtrack. There's actually not too many, but they do use them dynamically quite well, I thought. So you will hear a fair few of them in each level. And during the appropriate times, I found that occasionally when I was walking around in costume, I almost got that vibe I did in the second game where I was, you know, walking around trying not to be noticed, but, you know, not quite. But well, it is really good, though.
Well, yeah, it's worth noting that the songs aren't tied to locations in the same way that they are in Hitman 2 Silent Assassin and the way they are in many games. I mean, we just played Final Fantasy VII, and one of the things that I loved about that music is that the music was tied thematically to characters and places. So when you hear those songs, you associate them with those places. There's not really a single song here, apart from maybe the Heaven and Hell nightclub music, which is tied to a specific location. It's just a general brooding.
I do think most of the levels have one song that's unique to them, but there are like three or four that will play on like every level.
Ah, right. And those are the ones that I can remember more clearly.
Remember the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's just the repetition. I don't think there's a single bad song on the soundtrack, though.
No,
credit.
No, I agree with that. That it's not bad. It's just not. I mean, I was blown away by how good FF7's soundtrack was. And
oh
this
yeah,
one,
it's hard to hard to compare. To top that.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we'll play my favorite song on the soundtrack. This is Hunter.
Alrighty, so that was Hunter. I also thought that was one of the three best songs on the track. I definitely enjoyed it. So one thing that I wanted to talk about, Patrick, is the coin. How did you feel about the coin? This is a new addition to the series, I think, but one that is very well known by, you know, people who are familiar with Blood Money. It's quite a powerful tool, and one that I found myself reaching for quite a lot.
Well, the coin is very overpowered, ultimately. It lets you isolate guards to isolate anyone to take their costume. In some ways, it's too strong. If you were forced to just get costumes without using the coin, your options would be a lot more limited. And that aspect of the puzzle of Hitman, of gaining full access to an area, would be a bit more challenging. With the coin, it's ultimately trivial. It opens up, you know, 10 opportunities to get costumes, whereas without it, there might only be two.
Yeah, I kind of like it and I feel that same way you do. It reminds me a bit of the gun in Splinter Cell Chaos Theory that we spoke about a bit, that you point at a light and then when you click the trigger, it turns the light off while you hold it down. And that was basically the solution to every single stealth puzzle in that game. And I think a lot of people enjoy the game because of that gun and because of the coin and Hitman, because it kind of, it's extremely versatile, right? And I generally find that when items or, you know, things in games have lots of versatility that's not super obvious to begin with, it ends up being really enjoyable. A good example of this is we did Rainworld the other week, month now, and it had these little sticks that you could either use to kill monsters or throw them into walls to make platforms and that kind of thing. That we talked about, you know, there's the spear in the King Kong game. I really like things that have multiple uses that aren't obvious to begin with. The coin is a great example of this. It's super obvious at the beginning that you use it to distract guards, and then later on you realize you can break glass with it and all sorts of stuff. It's like, it's quite enjoyable, but I will say I actually think it feels like shit to throw, because I think it's been like, it's overpowered. And I don't think they realized how overpowered it was during development until maybe a bit later on. Because when you throw it, Agent 47 does this massive wind-up. He, like, pulls it behind his head, and he pegs it as hard as he can, and it goes, like, 2 meters.
Yeah, I think, you know, in modern games, he does more like a flipping motion to restrict its range.
Yeah, like I feel like it initially went way further, and then they were like, "Oh shit, this breaks the game in half." So they like brought it back a bit. It's still super powerful, but yeah, mechanically it doesn't feel very good to throw. I think
it's quite funny because there is some balancing done here that they should have just applied to the coin. So you have a limited number of syringes with poison and unconscious poison, I don't know, anesthetic inside it, which is very strong, but it doesn't give you unlimited uses. It gives you, I think, one of each, two of each.
There is infinite coins because you're rich, apparently.
Yeah, but if they'd just given you a limited number of coins, if they gave you one coin per level, or even two if they wanted to let the player splash around a little bit, it would have been a more fun tool, I think. I think the other
thing, during the mission select screen, you can pay 10,000
for one more
bring
coin.
One more coin.
Well, the other thing you do is, you know, it starts you off with one coin, but you can also discover another coin somewhere on the level. And that way you can find something in the level that can,
farm,
same with anesthetics.
You can farm innocent civilians for their coins.
No one carries coin. Everyone's got cards. You have to find an antique coin that does the job. I think the other thing that distinguishes it from Chaos Theory's light gun, I guess, is that getting a coin off obviously is overpowered, but it doesn't win the game for you, because winning the game in Hitman isn't about moving a guard. It's about figuring out what the fuck to do. Once you know what to do, the game is straightforward, but moving a person around ends up being just one small piece of the larger puzzle. And it's part of the trial and error on the path to figuring out the greater puzzle. So while it is overpowered, it wasn't annoying to me in the same way it was in Chaos Theory. And I think that to start with, it wouldn't be the first thing I went to every time. It was something I ended up going to when I was struggling to find a way forward otherwise.
I really liked it. Basically, in stealth games, I'm always like delighted when developers find a gadget that can be used purely for stealth and not for combat. Because again and again, and this game's no exception, you get so many useless items that you don't want to use, and you just want, like, you know, you want the game, you want items that expand the gameplay and open up interesting possibilities, and you just get given, like, you know, machine guns and shit that you're never going to use.
So an Uzi is like, cool, a room with an Uzi. Nice.
So, you know, the coin is overpowered, but I think it's overpowered in like a fun way, basically. I also liked the syringes too. And the remote mine, I actually found dozens of uses for that thing, right? Like, they are very intentionally scripted and put into the levels, but there are so many of them.
Yeah, I think that for me, they just needed to restrict the quantity of coins you have. That's literally it. In Thief, one of the strongest arrows in the game is the gas arrow, because it's an AoE unconscious knockout at range, right? But they don't give you 50 of them. They'll give you 3, and there'll be like one hidden in a very cool spot, so you get rewarded for discovering it. I just don't think that they, even with the nerf, I don't think they understood just how strong it was. Either that, or they didn't care, and they were happy for players to utilize it. But it's the kind of thing that isn't obviously overpowered in the same way that a, you know, high RPM assault rifle would be. But it ends up being far stronger than any gun or any other tool in the game.
More stuff like that, honestly. Give it, like, yeah, limited uses and more variety. But I think the game actually did a reasonable job of having things that you would use, right? Like, all the different syringes. I found I was, like, picking and choosing which one to use in certain situations. It wasn't, like, a major decision point or anything, but it was something I thought about, at least. The wire was interesting in that it didn't arouse suspicion. It was like the only weapon you could carry out and wouldn't alarm people.
Yeah, very good at strangling people in chairs as well.
Yeah, and they actually did a lot of work to make, like with the animation system, I thought, like, the thing you can do with elevators where if you're on top of the elevator, you can, like, reach down the hole and then strangle people and pull them up through the hole. You know, there's all sorts of stuff they've included. Like, that thing you're talking about with the newer games where they go for the, like, the sim elements. There's, like, the makings of that here, right? Like, the way you can hold people as human shields. It's not something, like, these things, you don't use them all the time, but when they pop up, you're appreciated, and it, like, stands out because they went to the effort of including these extra little bits to you to play around with.
Absolutely. And the only thing that's, the things that are missing really are the, you know, a good sneaking system, good line of sight system, because you get spotted from some absolutely bizarre angles sometimes. It's like the guards have infinite vision, and I would say more traversal options, that really stands out. There's a lot of spots where you just kind of like get walled off by a small you know, rise in the terrain. And that's very obvious with a lot of these old 3D games.
Ooh, where... did you encounter the bugs with the frame rate?
No.
Okay, so apparently, if you play this game at above, like, 60 frames or something, mine was, like, originally running at, like, 180 or something, because the game's old enough. There are places that you cannot go because there are... Here's an example. In the first level in the winery, there's that bit out the back where you walk down the hills to the dock.
Yep.
There is... If your frame rate is above 60, there is an invisible wall there that you cannot pass no matter what, and it makes the level unbeatable unless you go through the elevator inside.
That's weird. No. I never encountered that bug.
I had to quit the game and then force it to 30 FPS via NVIDIA control panel.
Jesus, okay.
And I read online that a lot of people had that issue, actually. So watch out for that, yeah.
James, there was something about the level design you were talking to me about the kinds of levels you liked and the kinds of levels you didn't. So I thought what it would be worth doing is jumping into a few levels, and we can dive into them a bit more detail about what we thought was good and what we thought was bad.
Okay, so my favorite level in the game was Suburbia, by quite a bit, actually. This is one of the ones that's the most popular, as far as I can tell. The thing I liked about it was that it starts off in this, you know, the suburb, and there's all these houses, and I didn't, like, the house that you're supposed to get into, I didn't go anywhere near the house for the start of the level. I actually walked around the streets and into the houses around, and found a bunch of cool stuff, like a sausage and your sleeping pills. And I was like, okay. And then I realized, oh, there's a dog guarding one of the entrances, so I can put these two together and you can throw the sausage over the fence. It'll put the dog to sleep. You find tranq rounds in this one house, and then down the street there is another house that has a big tree house overlooking your target's house, and in there is an airsoft rifle, which you can pick up and shoot without alerting too many people. But you can put the tranq darts in the airsoft rifle and use it as a tranq gun. Or there is a van down the road which is filled with FBI agents monitoring the house because it's like some gangster's ha home, right? There's all sorts of like stuff in this level that's just like hidden there and you're not going to find it. But if you really explore, there's like, there's some really cool things. I liked it a lot.
I didn't like this level that much. And the reason for that is that while there were lots of cool things in the level, I found the actual execution of it to be pretty straightforward. The main target, you kind of assassinate. I was able to figure it out by tripping the lights, and then the guard would run out and you'd just kill him. The wife who had the bracelet around her neck, she had a lot more fun things to do. But ultimately, I just put a costume on to kind of get access to the mansion, and then I was able to figure out the buzz puzzle and be on my way.
One thing I tried to do was I found this pipe on the side of the house that led into a window. So I climbed through the window and I ended up in the baby's room. And as soon as 47 walked, stepped through the window, his foot landed on a squeaky toy that alerted all the guards in the hallway. And I immediately got shot to death. It was
That's quite
so
funny.
funny. Yeah, like. I ended up actually using the airsoft rifle, and I put a guard to sleep in the backyard, and then I put like 12 more guards to sleep in, and there was just this pile of sleeping guards like in the back door, and then the dog was asleep, and I just walked in. It was so funny.
I guess this is one of the missions where replayability is a big part of the appeal, because I can see how having all these cool different options is fun if you get to experiment with them all and play with them. I am often drawn to a far simpler one, so I put on the clown costume, and then one of the pieces of intel is that the wife wants to is definitely very faithful to her husband and definitely doesn't sleep around. And you can put on either the clown costume or the pool boy costume, and she'll take you to her room for some fun,
She
which is
likes
quite
clowns,
hilarious.
that's great.
I know it's quite funny. I thought I'd have to get changed again, but no, she was
And
into
maybe
the
that's
clown
why she's with her husband.
costume. But ultimately, I found that this mission had less axes of interaction for actually assassinating your target, and the small level meant that there were. I don't know, there just
I
wasn't as
actually
much to
agree with
find.
you that the actual assassinating of the guy is not very interesting at all. To me, it was the whole like how to get into the house to begin with that was kind of fun, and how much stuff I just found that I wasn't expecting. I think when games subvert your expectations, like me finding that sausage and that airsoft rifle, I just did not expect there to be so much stuff outside of the house because normally. Like when you load into the Vegas level, for example, if you turn around, there's nothing there. But there was stuff all sorts like on the outskirts. It was really cool.
Yeah, so my favorite mission was the Heaven and Hell nightclub mission. So you start the start is pretty straightforward, but the basic idea is that there are two nightclubs that you access through elevators. One requires you to wear a heaven uniform, and one requires you to wear a hell uniform. And both of these nightclubs are, they're pretty seedy nightclubs catering to the very rich elite. But they're very thematically different, and your targets are on different levels of the nightclubs. What I liked about this level was it felt very dynamic to me in terms of how the mission unfolded. There were multiple points where other NPCs would proactively interact with you and where different things would happen. I thought there were some cool kills, and I thought that I figured out that there's a specific costume you can wear that lets you walk between the two nightclubs freely instead of having to change uniforms.
So the CIA agents one, the gold mask?
No, there was one where you were like it had a gold mask. One of
Yeah, that was the CIA.
Oh, that was the CIA one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The target guy.
Yeah. So it was just, to me, it was thematically cohesive. And also, I think this is part of my enjoyment. I was able to figure this one out without ever looking up a walkthrough. I got through the entire thing with no walkthrough usage. Definitely a couple of the missions, James, I did eventually give in and look up a walkthrough. The intel was able to get me there most of the time, but sometimes I was just missing some key interaction that I just misunderstood. So definitely I did a couple of times. The missions where I didn't have to do that, I don't know if that means the mission was brilliant or it just syncs with me better, but it feels so good when you can kind of puzzle it out yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I looked up a walkthrough on that one with the nursing home, like the psychiatry ward, and the Vegas level, because I found it kind of confusing. It had just been like literally just like wait more.
Yeah, one of them. I looked it up on the boat level because there was one target I couldn't find, because that level has like a zillion targets. And then I looked it up once on the Mardi Gras level, a level I also liked a lot. But which ultimately I was just a bit confused with how to get started.
I liked how a couple of the levels actually, they do this thing where there is a bit of a random element. So you have to do the level the intended way, like even if you've done the level before, because you don't know, because there's like potential targets or places that the target can be. But
yeah,
you
the Mardi Gras level is fantastic.
It's kind of like that.
I love that thing where you get this radio and the radio reveals the location of where the target is headed. It's very cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
Loved a lot, because otherwise it would be literally impossible to find it because the streets are literally swarming with people. So,
swarming with people, yeah.
So I thought that was a very good touch.
I stumbled on the other one. She just walked past me.
That's so funny.
It's like, nice. One of my other levels, one of the other levels I really liked was the Hick wedding with all the like rednecks shooting guns, because it adds this spin on the formula, because everyone is drunk and shooting their handguns into the air and cheering. And there's so much like wild gun usage happening that you can actually shoot your gun in this level and the sound doesn't trigger alarms because it's just like another guy shooting a gun. And I was like, that's great. That's such a fun way to put a spin and actually let you use your weapons where normally you can't. I didn't actually end up using mine that much in this one. I went for a couple of cool kills. There was an alligator pit, which you can just like shove one of the targets into. Or there's like an open grave for this guy's like brother or something. You can shove him in there. And there's like a priest because there's a wedding. So you can kill the priest, take his costume. And as 47, you can like recite the vows and perform the wedding ceremony. It's kind of funny.
The funniest part of like that level is that outside there's a dance floor and there's like, I don't know, 8 to 10 NPCs dancing on it. And if you walk onto the dance floor, they all immediately stop and just stare at you. Did you have that happen to you?
Yeah, you can join in the dancing, but yeah, they all just stop and look at
you. How do you do that?
I think you need a specific costume or something.
Right.
That's so I forget funny. What it was exactly, but
just like they all turn on a dime. It's hilarious. I want to also talk about some of the levels you and I didn't like. I know one of these is widely beloved and the other one is not and is considered
beloved.
Shit. The boat level is considered bad by most people, but the casino level people actually quite like in general.
I actually saw a lot of people saying they disliked the casino too.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I saw mixed reviews. Personally, okay, so my opinion on this is that they both suck for the same reason. So in Thief 2, I mentioned that there was this level that I really hated because it was basically you in an apartment building, and I've come to realize over the years that symmetrical level design is just heinous and awful because it's A, there's no, like when everything looks the same, when you have a multi-floor building where all of the floors have the same layout, it's difficult to figure out where you are in the level because everything looks the same. And also these like apartment or hotel or, you know, river cruise hotel kind of levels, By like logically, they need to have lots of guest rooms, which the designers can't fill every single one of these rooms with something cool, which means, and the game's a puzzle, so I have to check every room. So you just go through the level, you check every room you check results in you being disappointed that there was nothing interesting in there, and that you have to keep searching and then getting lost. And yeah, I hate it. Make your levels weird and have landmarks and have weird geometry. Don't have these like squares filled with little useless rooms. It's awful.
And as is often the case, I feel the need to cite Resident Evil here. Resident Evil is a mansion. It's a largely symmetrical mansion, but thanks to its unique architectural features, thanks to its fixed camera angles giving you unique shots, every single room, in fact, every single camera angle shot of every single room is architecturally distinct. And I still remember the layout of that mansion as a consequence of that. Like it fits in my head, and I can't forget how it looks or how it all feels together because they put so much effort into creating unique spaces. So, James, this is one which I completely and utterly agree with you with. And I think that the other thing is that these two missions are probably the largest in terms of surface area. So the boat mission feels huge. I don't know.
No,
Maybe
no, the
if you.
boat's definitely the biggest. I'm just wondering about the casino level. It's sort of big.
Yeah,
I
I
don't
felt
think
like it was a slog getting around, and maybe that's because of all the elevators. But
I agree.
I think that we've identified that it's really cool when these levels are small and dense. When they are large, I think that it loses what it's going for. Now, in Hitman 2 Silent Assassin, I think the large levels served a purpose because those large levels you were traversing from point A to B. When you're having to instead run around in circles around a large level, it is far more frustrating.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wanted to ask you, these two levels, how did you feel like we spoke about how I like suburbia, but you thought the kills were pretty boring. Do you think I think it's the opposite here where the levels suck, but the actual bits where you assassinate the people was totally fine. Like on the hotel, you can do a bunch of cool sniping stuff. You can put the bomb in the briefcase and throw it over to the guy. On the boat, you can put, a bomb in a cake and deliver it to him. I thought all that stuff was totally fine. It was purely the like during the scouting part of the scout plan execute, it was like miserable. And then when you finally had a plan, it was okay.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, and also the casino one is one I also looked up a walkthrough for, because I was unsure how to go about killing one of the targets. But in general, yes, the ways which you killed these targets was fine. It's just that the levels were so big that it was frustrating to get through them. In general, the times where I was most frustrated and bored with this game was when I didn't know what to do. If I had an idea of what I needed to do, and in the game's defense, the intel does give you pretty good
I
direction.
found it was useless.
Really? Okay. I
Every
felt.
time I bought all the intel, I was like, none of this is relevant. I don't know,
Well,
maybe I couldn't read between the lines or
I really
something.
wanted to avoid using walkthroughs as much as possible with this game because everyone says like the joy of the game is uncovering the puzzles yourselves. So I really tried to lean heavily into using the intel. But even with it, there were definitely some instances where I was just like, I just don't know how to do this, and it was frustrating as a consequence.
Yeah, I had that in the Mardi Gras level a bit near the end. When she was talking to the other guy, I couldn't hear any music, so I didn't know where he was. And it
Right.
turns out he was in, like, I think it was the jazz, the blues bar, but he was up in the attic where there wasn't really any music, so I just had no idea. And the only reason I found him was because I opened up the map and was like, okay, that's the biggest building. He's probably in there, and he happened to be in there. But I like atmospherically, it's the best level in the game, I think.
Oh, absolutely. When it starts, I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, this is so cool. I
Yeah,
mean,
it's sick.
that's really surprising for a game released in 2006, where you actually think, man, this is technologically quite cool to be immersed in this crowd. And I understand a lot of it's just fake. It's just empty bits clipping around, but it's very convincing in how it appears. And I just love how unbelievably crowded it is. It's quite a cool level. It's
really sick, yeah.
Quite like it.
Yeah, in general, just love the visual design of this game. It really brought the experience up for me. I think some of the levels were pretty flat in the series previously for me, but here...
Yeah, I agree with that. Every single kind of bland texture work and lots of boring walls. I mean, lots of levels in sewers and snow and desert, right?
Yeah, then not a lot of, like, personality, I guess. I also think that the targets in this game, like, you know, the level starts with a loading screen that shows you their face, and they're always quite visually interesting-looking people. I think that generally, like, the targets are more characters. I don't remember a single... like assassination target from the first two games. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I don't remember what they look like or what their story was, but in this game I remember most of them. If you tell me, maybe it's a recency thing, but I think those like load screen transitions that show you the target's face close up are quite useful in that regard.
Yeah, I agree with that. Knowing who it is you need to kill, you can immediately recognize them. It tends to be a higher resolution model as well, which is nice. So
yeah,
you're not left too confused as to who you need to murder.
Mm. All right. That's pretty much at the end of my notes, Pat. I don't know if you had any more major kills.
No, I don't really have much else. I mean, we could have another music break before we wrap up.
Yeah, we can do that. I wouldn't mind doing the Paris theme. I think it's called Action in Paris. Had a bit more of the opera vibe going on. In general, I quite like the, you know, you mentioned it before, like this like gothic and almost religious kind of sounding tone to the soundtrack. I think this one captures that pretty well. So here's Action in Paris, and we'll be back for the final conclusions afterwards. Alrighty, Patrick, let us hear your opinion on Hitman Blood Money. Was this better than the second game, or did it let you down in some regards?
This is something that I have been really, really struggling with, actually, because ultimately I think that I prefer Hitman 2 Silent Assassin to Hitman Blood Money. Hitman Blood Money, it kind of feels like it's in this, it's like a prototype. To say it's a prototype is not being fair, because it is more sophisticated than that, but it feels like the blueprint that was used to make the modern Hitman games, where they integrated traditional stealth gameplay with the puzzle solving of classic Hitman. Hitman 2, and I think that ultimately what it comes down to is that I'm far more attracted to traditional stealth gameplay than I am the puzzle stealth aspect that Hitman offers. Hitman, Two Silent Assassin felt like it had a better balance of these two things. Blood Money doubles down on the puzzle aspects in a way that I think takes away something from what Silent Assassin was doing. And I think that the modern series is probably the realization of what it is that I want from a Hitman game. That being said, Hitman Blood Money is a good game. Like, I do think that it is a good execution of this concept. There are some niggles and some lack of polish here. There are times where you get frustrated at having to wait for long times, frustrated at the iteration of figuring things out. But if you can get through a level and figure it all out, you feel like a goddamn genius. And it is very satisfying when you find those accidental kills. Do I recommend Hitman Blood Money? That's really tough. It depends on the kind of person you are. If the thing that attracts you the most about Hitman games is the puzzle aspect, if when you're playing the modern Hitman games, for example, the thing that you like the most is discovering the elaborate scripted kills, you can probably come to Hitman Blood Money and have a really good time. If your favorite thing, if you enjoy Hitman 1, you'll probably really enjoy Hitman Blood Money, because it does a lot of doubling down on the cool scripted sequences and kills. If you are a normal stealth game player, if your stealth game preferences run more towards Thief and Splinter Cell, Metal Gear Solid, those kinds of games, I do not recommend Hitman Blood Money. I think that you will not get what you want out of this game, and I think that you're better off playing the second game or the modern games, which integrate these two features better. As to whether I recommend it for myself, I think that on balance, I did enjoy this game. I was just surprised at how conflicted I felt about it when compared to how much I enjoyed the second game. So yeah, it's a bit of a weird one for me, James. I've really been ruminating it a lot in the past couple of weeks, and I'm still a little confused even now as to why I wouldn't say bounced off it, but why I didn't love it as much as everyone else seems to.
That's interesting. And I kind of thought that this would be the case, because to me, it's much easier. It's less tense. There's less atmosphere in some ways. And instead, we've got a very almost cinematic game, which is more about a variety and fun and, you know, finding these cool kills that are basically handed to you on a silver platter, right? Like, it's a, you know, more of a novelty-driven game than a, you know, mechanics and gameplay one, I think. So for me, this ended up being much more enjoyable than the last two. I found myself really getting into Hitman Blood Money in a way that I did not in the first and second games. I found that the shift to these smaller, more densely packed levels that are easier to traverse, there's less fucking around after you reload a save, doing the same thing over and over and over again until you get it right. And there's more like running around, exploring, finding these cool opportunities to set up fun and interesting, you know, accidental kills, and just generally learning about the levels. I really enjoy this. I really like being dumped into the level and spending like 20 to 40 minutes just walking around and trying to map it out all in my head. I really enjoy that. And I really enjoyed the way that this game did it. I thought it was excellent. So other than those two levels, I basically really enjoyed every single level in the game. So
the general quality is quite high, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the biggest change for me is the visual direction. There is so much more like dramatic flair in the levels. There is really out there wild stuff happening in all of them, but they still feel contextually appropriate. Like, I never felt that any of these visual elements felt like they were jumping the shark or being too silly. They all were justifiable in the moment, right? Like, all the silly bird costumes in the Mardi Gras was totally appropriate. All the silly devil masks in the CD nightclub level, totally appropriate. And they're all just super fun to find and walk around. Like, you know, I thought it was really good. The story's like the weakest part of the game, in my opinion.
It doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Same with the upgrading. Like, both of these elements are bad, objectively, I think. But they don't The core gameplay isn't affected by either of these elements, so they're like barely even a negative. So for me, this game's an easy recommend. It's the first game in the series that I've enjoyed overall, and I'm actually kind of interested in playing the newer games now in a way that I definitely wasn't before.
I mean, you should. You absolutely should. You just need to turn off all of the stuff that directs you and play them like puzzle games. Because some,
Direct to?
yeah, basically they've added in optional things to have a bunch of things that just tell you what to do in order to get the special kills.
Right,
But
okay.
you can turn all that off if you want to play it in a more classic way.
Is it how it tells, does it tell you every kill, or is it just like there's one on
Literally
each
will guide
level?
you through the kills step by step and the steps you need.
Right, okay.
Which is weird to me. Like, I mean, like I get it. It's the kind of thing maybe you could toggle it on if you got stuck, but at the same time, it's like, isn't that the whole game? I guess with the stealth aspect, it's less of a big deal because there's more on the execution side, but still.
It reminds me of the thing in Last of Us 1, and I don't know, maybe 2 has it too, where you can basically like see through walls where enemies are. Like that shit needs to be turned off in the menu immediately. Otherwise it's not a real game,
So I had a thought. I mentioned this earlier. Hitman is a time loop game. I would be very interested if they had would commit to this concept fully. Like, let's say you arrive and the mission lasts for 10 minutes. Like, the mission is on a timer for 10 minutes and the target is moving through the hotel and they do specific things on their course through the hotel. So they might stop at a bar for a drink, quickly go see a former fling in their room before leaving the hotel, whatever. They have a set path, and your goal is basically to find windows of opportunity to perform multiple assassinations in that 10-minute window. So there might be three targets you need to kill, and on the first couple of tries it would be literally impossible because you wouldn't even know who the targets were, where they were. But after following them and scouting out over and over again, you would find chances to, in that 10 minutes, to get those three kills off perfectly before leaving. And to me, that sounds like an amazing game because it commits so hard to this idea of actually scouting out the perfect kill. Does that sound appealing to you, James? Because I kind of feel that's what I want from Hitman. If it were to commit on that axis really hard, then I could get more into it because it would be less about, I don't know, running around aimlessly and more about figuring out where on the path these three targets.
So you basically you're given more information up front, like you know exactly what your goal is, and you have a more like an easier time of scouting out.
Well,
Is that
yeah,
what you're
like
kind of getting at?
what you would do on each run is you would just follow each target around to understand what their route through the hotel was. And then you'd find the second target, figure out where that is, and maybe along the way maybe there'd be an opportunity to kill two at the same time.
Yeah, I do think the game would be better if the timeline basically happened faster. There's a lot of
And if you
like.
missed it, it was just another reset. I'd be cool.
Yeah, maybe 10 minutes is such a long period of time to replay over and over. It's like we've gone back to the first game.
Yeah, I mean maybe 5 minutes then. Like it 10
Yeah,
minutes, you're
speed it
right.
up. Yeah.
Yeah, 5 minutes
Yeah.
is, with the level being dense enough, you could definitely do it in 5 minutes.
Honestly, I was getting you haven't played it, but Zelda Majora's Mask kind of has this thing where like the game's on a timer constantly, and there is stuff that you need to. There's like these quests that have like multiple parts to them, but you need to do exactly the right thing at the right time of day. But there's no way you can know what to do without trying it like a few times in a row. It kind of reminded me, like, I was thinking about that game when I was playing this. It's like it's very similar.
Yeah, one of the reasons I want to do Majora's Mask is that one of my favorite games of all time is The Outer Wilds. And that's a puzzle game that's on a time loop. And a lot of the puzzles in that game are dependent on you doing certain things at certain times. So I think it's a really intriguing concept. And I think that Hitman is quite close to it, even though, there's nothing science fiction-y in Hitman apart from the cloning and stuff. You could totally do a version of this game that leans a lot heavily into that trial and error and make it a core concept of the game, And I think if you do that, it becomes far less of an annoyance when you buy into the idea that the same things are happening every single loop.
Yeah, I'd be down for trying like a more condensed version of the formula, but I already thought it was pretty good. I want to see more levels like Suburbia where there's heaps of random shit. Like, that was the closest I got to feeling like I was, you know, discovering something cool and interesting and not just, here's the exact place to put the bomb, you know?
It's definitely made me more keen to try some more of the Hitman games, because I've played the first two or three levels of the first game, and that's it. So I kind of think that I should give it a proper go. But that's really it. Do you have anything else, James?
No, it was a great game. Wrap up? Played it.
So that is Hitman Blood Money. Thank you so much to everyone for listening to us talk about it. We are the Retrospectives Podcast. You can find all of our content on our website, which is rspodcast.net. It's got links to all of the articles and episodes. We've done all 118 now, as well as links to our social media stuff, the most important of which is our Discord server. If you enjoy the show, want to tell us what you think, if you want to recommend us a game to play, we would love if you would drop by our Discord server. It's where we do all of our communication with the community. And finally, if you really enjoy the show and want to support us monetarily, we have a Buy Me a Coffee page, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. So with Hitman Blood Money out of the way, it goes back to you, James. What game are we going to be playing next?
Well, I think we haven't done a racing game in quite some time, so I think it's about time we hit the track again. I saw a few people talking in Discord about doing a more like sim-like racer, and I realized I actually haven't really ever given one a proper go. I've always played these more like arcadey games, stuff like F-Zero, Mario Kart, etc. So I think it's time we give a real racing game a go, and not in the sense of Need for Speed. We're going to go or like, you know, Burnout that we already did. I think we're going to go with Gran Turismo 4, which I hear is an extremely good game on the PlayStation 2, one that people say they enjoyed quite a lot, and is probably, you know, it's a bit out of my wheelhouse. It seems to be a game about playing with a lot of different cars and learning the ins and outs of their handling and that kind of thing, so kind of interested to give it a go. It's not something that I would normally pick for myself, but, you know, first time for everything.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to give this one a crack. I think that racing games is one of the genres for this show that you've really opened my eyes to, James. Like, I'd never really played them when I was young. And over the course of doing F-Zero, GX, and Diddy Kong Racing, I've actually come to quite like the genre. So I'm pretty keen to try a proper racer. And I know that this one is still, you know, is not a full-on proper sim like some of the ones out there, but it's definitely more sim-like than anything we've done for the show so far. So I'm looking to rise up to the challenge of learning something genuinely new. It's actually a really fun thing to do sometimes. Being terrible at video games is not a bad thing. It's actually the process of learning something that you're completely unfamiliar with can be incredibly gratifying and enjoyable. But it's something that we maybe don't default to. We like what we're comfortable with, and we tend to play the same genres over and over. So I'm always grateful for this show to push me out of my comfort zone and try something radically new. And we can bring a newcomer's perspective on what Gran Turismo 4 is all about.
Yeah, I hear the start's a bit like you start with a really bad car and you kind of work your way up as the game goes on. So it's like like at the start, it's like a coming like fourth is an achievement, right? That's kind of how, you know, these races work. Instead of, I think video games are very much a you didn't come first, you lose kind of thing. So
that's very cool.
We'll find out. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the progression.
Okay, well, I'm very much looking forward to it. We'll see you all in a few weeks for Gran Turismo.
See you then, guys.